I'm an addict named Mark. And I've been clean since December 11th of 1990. And the topic is sponsorship. And so I'm going to do the best I can to share my experience, strength, and hope on sponsorship as I tell my story. Hopefully, it'll kind of relate in there some way. I don't know. I came up this morning and kind of just wanted to relax and unwind and try to get some spiritual growth today some kind of way. And so I got away from the city, and as I'm driving up here, I'm talking with a friend of mine. And I had no intentions on doing this when I was coming, but God got a plan that I don't know nothing about. And as I was walking to lunch, you know, and they had asked me would I speak on sponsorship, and I started thinking about this topic. And it's not easy to like to share on a topic and stay on topic, and that's all that you talk about. But I was thinking about I just turned 55. I started using when I was 13. I didn't stop until I was 33. And me and my father's birthday are 2 days apart. And for whatever reason, this year, I went through a lot of emotional stuff over my father's birthday a couple days before mine. And as I was walking through the woods up here today, I was beginning to realize with this topic that my father was my original sponsor. He's the guy that was like leading me and guiding me through life. And I never listened to my father a lot. He used to say stuff that kind of like just didn't make no sense to me when I was coming up. But it ain't till now that I'm older that I can look back and see how some of the things that he had shared with me about life and living were real important, and how it plays an important part in me standing up and being a man that I always wanted to be in my own heart. And I'm probably almost the man he wants me to be, but I always leave room for improvement. He would say stuff to me like whenever we were using, and I grew up in a neighborhood with a bunch of guys. We were like eight guys. We were all the same age. We did everything together. And he would say stuff like, if everybody jumped off the bridge, would you jump too? You know, and I'm thinking to myself at the time, of course I would jump. You know, the shame and guilt of everybody else doing something. And, well, what's wrong, Mark? Are you scared, punk? You know, so I would kind of like go along to get along. I would kind of like do what everybody else was doing, not realizing that what was popular wasn't always right. You know, so I neglected his guidance for a lot of years. You know, and my mom was also one of my original sponsors, and she was just so kind and loving, you know, in the way that she would try to teach me things. She would say stuff to me, you know, like, God, because she was kind of like spiritual without me knowing what spiritual was, take care of babies and fools. And we wasn't qualifying for the baby category no more, right? But it's, you know, and it's all of the stuff that like they were trying to teach me and instill in me, that I never took the direction, I never took the guidance, I was never open-minded enough to sit down and listen to what somebody else was trying. I'm sure at some point in my life, somebody told me about don't get high. Don't take the first one. I'm sure that I heard that somewhere in my life. But, you know, before the age of 33, I'm almost positive somebody told me don't get high. But yeah, I just wasn't open, you know, enough to listen to it. You know, and then coming to this program, and I guess Narcotic Anonymous gives sponsorship. You know, it's a term that we wasn't using in the street, that's for sure. You know, even though like some of them guys who had taught me everything that I knew, I was with one of my cousins last week, and this cat taught me everything I knew about the streets. I got two older brothers, both of them dead today, and one of my brothers died when I was real young, so he didn't get a chance to teach me a whole lot about the streets, but he did sponsor me in some other areas of my life, But I was with my older cousin this week, and he taught me everything I knew about growing up in the streets of Homewood Brushton. I grew up in Homewood Brushton, and Homewood Brushton is like any ghetto USA. Drugs was easier to get than a loaf of bread. And there was like unwritten rules that you followed. You know, I mean, there was guidelines, you know, if that's what we want to call them. And there was things that you did and didn't do. And somebody taught me all of that stuff while I was out there, you know. And I just didn't come out knowing. I didn't come knowing. And it's the way I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I came to Narcotics Anonymous not knowing. Right, not knowing nothing, not having nothing, so it was kind of like understandable for me, you know, to come to this program and kind of like early on, I got introduced to this program in November of '88. Now I done just told you my clean date is December 11th of 1990, so I got 2 years getting introduced to this program, right, and listening to these readings. Who is an addict? Most of us don't have to think twice about this question. We know. And if you ain't sure, just keep coming back. You know, as I look around the room, everybody in here is pretty much pretty solid and sound in their recovery. So when I came here and you know, getting a sponsor was one of the first suggestions that you get when you come to the program. And we all get the same suggestions when you come. You know what I mean? Go to meetings, pray, get a sponsor, get a home group, talk about how you feel. Don't take nothing. We all get those same suggestions pretty much. And the suggestions is free. The ones you pay for is the ones you don't take. You know, and that's what I did from '88. To December 11th of 1990, I paid for the suggestions that I wouldn't take. You know, not just from a sponsor, because when I came in '88, I chose a guy to be my sponsor. He was a guy that I knew from the street. He was 6 years clean. And back in '88, there wasn't a whole lot of people with 6 years clean. It's nothing like it is today. This fellowship done grow leaps and bounds. I'm talking about you could count the people with 6 years on one hand back then in our area, you know, which was the Pittsburgh Area Service of Narcotics Anonymous. And I knew this guy from the street. He knew my whole family. He shot dope with my brothers. And I knew that he knew something about me. And I asked this guy to sponsor me. And he said, sure, Marky, I'm going to help you. And hey, Steve. And we exchanged numbers. Well, he gave me his number. We didn't exchange numbers, right? He gave me his number and said, call him. And I never called him. Never, ever called him. So here was some help available to me. Right? Talking about having a tool that I can use and not using it. You know, so of course I didn't reap the benefits or the rewards that come along with that opportunity. And I went 2 years in this program, in and out, in and out, in and out, because I wouldn't listen to what nobody else had to say. Right? And it was just, I don't know, I guess I'm just kind of like hard-headed. You know, that's another thing my daddy used to say to me, hard head, make a soft, you know what. You know, and back then wasn't no such thing as child abuse. And I had the type of father who would physically enforce his will upon you. And somewhere in our literature, and I think it's in the 11th step, it talks about how forced morality lacks the ability to get us to like move forward and come closer to the God of our understanding or whoever that is. And so I guess I always rebelled against authority figures, not knowing that a sponsor wasn't an authority figure. You know, when I finally came back in 1990, in '88 I got clean because my wife at the time said, if you don't do something about your problem, you got to go. And I didn't come for me, right? And I would be sitting at the crack table thinking, boy, I'm going to miss her. you know, and so that was my attitude. But in 1990, December 10th of 1990, I sit on the side of the bed and I cried because I didn't know how it ended up the way I had ended up. You know, and I cried out for help from God. I'd say, God, help. And I didn't promise him nothing in return. And when I needed him the most, I deserved him the least. And he helped me anyway. You know, and he brought me to this program. And this time, I went to a treatment facility. And in this treatment facility, I met this guy, right? And this guy ended up being my first sponsor. He was always encouraging to me. He would always say something positive every time he'd see me. How you doing, Mark? Don't worry, it's going to be okay. Just don't take nothing, right? And this guy must have knew something about me. At least I thought he knew something about me, you know, because he would give it to me so kind and loving. He must have knew that at some point somebody was trying to, like, physically enforce what they believed upon me, and he didn't do that with me. You know, and he didn't give me carte blanche to go out and tear up the world, but this is what he told me. He said, Mark, you could do anything you want to do. Now, this is when I was new, right? You could do anything you want to do except get high. And that was simple enough for me. I could relate to that. You know what I mean? And he wasn't telling me that, like, you can go out, rob, steal, pillage. You know what I mean? He was telling me, just don't get high. No matter what happens, don't get high. And early in recovery, I needed it that way. I was the kind of guy that needed it a softer, easier way. You know, and he would give me like recovery. And what had happened was through sponsorship and this guy, he not only, like we talk about sponsorship being the guy through the steps, this guy brought me to meetings and introduced me to people. He knew people in the program. So, and this is what happened. Now, me and him exchanged numbers. I remember him taking my number, and the very first night I didn't call him, he called me. He called me when I got out of treatment. The day I got out of treatment, he called me and said, "What you doing tomorrow? You want to go to a meeting with me?" And I agreed. He took me to a meeting. He introduced me to some people, and he started giving me some real simple suggestions, the same suggestions I talked about that we all get around here that are free. You know, he told me to get phone numbers. And in 1990, well, it wasn't no cell phones. You had to have a real phone book. You know what I mean? And it's, I believe, like, when we talk about having issues with the phone today, I just don't understand them all of the time. And I'm going to talk about what's wrong with Narcotics Anonymous. But in 1990, you had to have a phone book. You had to make a call from home or a pay phone, and you had to hope that the person you was calling was at home. It wasn't like, you know what I mean? I'm sponsoring guys today, and I got my cell phone with me all day, every day. And it's on all day, every day. And they have total access to me all day, every day. Right? And some of them call, some of them don't. Right? And the ones that don't call, they're in the same place I was in 88, having opportunity and access to a tool that I'm not using. You know, and he taught me little simple things about this program. Not only guided me through the steps, but he taught me little stuff about, like, sitting up front. You know, he took me to some meetings, just sit up front. And I didn't understand the value of sitting up front and being able to focus on what was happening at the podium as opposed to sitting in the back. And every time the little cute girl get up and go to the coffee pot, she got my focus. You know, and he taught me about the little slogans and phrases in his program. And the one that he always emphasized was his favorite. And it was about, not whatever happens, you don't get high. Right, and he told me just to stay clean. Now I'm clean a little more than 21 and a half years. This is how I stay clean: pray, go to a meeting, and don't take nothing. And that's what that guy taught me early on. Right, he said this is how you stay clean. Now, if you want recovery, recovery is a whole lot more. Now you got to start practicing spiritual principles of the 12 steps, and that's where he became valuable to me too, because he helped me get knowledge and understanding of what spiritual principles come out of what steps. You know, and then he helped me to get an understanding of how I would practice that stuff in my life, how I would apply the honesty to my life, because the spiritual principles ain't nothing new. I told you that I had an original sponsor that my mom taught me about honesty as a little kid. And so coming to this program and learning honesty in the first step, we admit it. And that's what he taught me. That's the kind of stuff that he taught me. And he would help me learn and understand, like, the steps. He would take the steps, and we would break them down into little phrases. And I was just at a meeting, and the girl talked about going through the dictionary and understanding what the words really, really meant. You know what I mean? Because we come to this program, and we start hearing words that we wasn't using in the street, like sponsorship. You know what I mean? Had no idea what that meant, you know? And the best I could come up with was, like, Pepsi would sponsor you, you know what I mean, to give you money to have you talking about you got the right one, baby, or something like that. You know, so this guy was, like, really, really valuable, and he sponsored me for 4.5 years. And in 4.5 years, he ended up getting sick and dying. And I was kind of like, I was lost at first. And then, I don't know if it was God saying something to me, but the guy who originally I asked to be my sponsor in 1988, some kind of way, he was right there, you know, and I asked him, like, take me on. I need help in this program. And the sponsor is kind of like, throughout our literature, it talks about different things with sponsorship, how it's kind of like the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And that describes sponsorship, right? It's the each one teach one program, you know, because we can best one addict can best understand and help another addict. And in the Just for Today, where it talks about just for today, I'll have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Not everybody. I ain't come to this program and get naive. I ain't fool to think that everybody got my best interest at heart. But that's just my little personal stuff that I got with me. You know what I mean? I'd really, really love to believe that everybody in Narcotics Anonymous love me and want to help me in my recovery. But that's not my reality. You know what I mean? But this one guy who shot dope with my older brothers, who knew my mama, my daddy, my sisters, my brothers, I knew his brothers. His father was a cop. You know what I mean? And this cat was really, really special to me. You know, and I looked up to him, and I was like, if he could be clean. And here, when I went out in 88, right, and came back in 90, he was still here. You know, but God just put somebody else in my life at that time to help me through them first years and to help me through the beginning of the steps. You know, and then, you know, my first sponsor passed away. I asked this other guy, would he sponsor me? And he said, sure. And he said something to me one day that really made me want to stay. He stood me, we were in a little alley, and he stood me back there one day, and he said, Marky, God got you here for a reason. And I made a decision at that point to stick around long enough to find out what it was. Right, and what I've learned, like through these 12 steps and through this program, is that the God of my understanding don't have me here for me. He does not have me here for me. I would love to be so selfish to think that like it's all about me, but it's not. You know, really, really, and in my heart, I'm starting to understand it don't have nothing to do with me. You know, and I'm sponsoring some men today. You know, and some of them I think that I help, and then some of them I think that I hurt. I think the guys that I sponsor who don't call regular and just use me as a sponsor in name, I'm not so sure that I'm really, really helping them guys the best that I can. And I'm just not the guy that's going to tell them they have to move on. Maybe it's just me and my personality, you know. And I go to meetings a lot, and sometimes I see them, but they never call. You know, and then I've got several guys that call me all of the time. You know, there's a couple guys, they call every other day, 3-4 times a week. And then there's a couple guys that they may call once a week or something like that. But most of the guys I sponsor have time in this program between 10 and 15 years. And I just took on a new sponsee about a month ago, you know, and the cat had 30 days in the program. And he is so enthusiastic about this program. He's just like re-sparking my interest in doing step work. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, I got a new book where I'm starting to write all over again for myself what step one is, let alone just sit down with him and try to get an understanding of how honesty and surrender become part of the first step to get us to acceptance of things that happen in our lives. And it's like really, it's been a blessing, you know, that God has put someone who is enthusiastic about this program and really, really wants this program in my life. And I just try to do the same thing that my original sponsor done for me. You know, to like, I'll call him a lot of times. I can remember being new to this program, and my first sponsor taught me that, you know, at the time, every meeting you go to, you get three numbers. You know, and you'd have to go up, and it was the hardest thing in the world to ask another guy, right? I would have had no problem asking her, you know what I'm saying? Right? But to have to come to you, man, you know what I mean? Because, hey, the number. And then it was even harder to be able to say, ask for help. Would you help me? I'm making a mess of my life, and I don't know what to do. Would you help me, please? You know, and it was the hardest thing in the world, man. For me to reach out to me, because I've come up in a time where I'm 55. I came up in a time where we was taught God bless the child that got his own. And we wasn't brought up to talk about on the streets how I feel. Come on, Chuck, let me tell you how I'm feeling, right? You just wasn't brought up that way, and it wasn't deeply rooted in me. So it took a while, and it took practice, you know, to be able to go to these guys and ask them, you know, for help, or to tell them the more intimate, personal stuff. You know what I mean? My wife left me. My wife and kids left when I was using, and I really, really just want them back. You know, and what can I do? You know what I mean? Well, the first thing you got to do is stay clean. But he didn't have a clue on what to tell me. how to get my wife and kids back, such as stay clean. This is a good starting point, right? And so that's what he would give me what he had. You know, I was talking with my friend today on the phone. I have a friend I talk to pretty regular, and they've been in the program a little bit longer than me, maybe 25, 26 years. And we talk about a lot of different stuff. And so we were talking today about financial security stuff, right? We were talking about, and I don't know how it came out, but it, and this is how it related to sponsorship, right? My mother and father never once ever talked to me about having credit and keeping credit straight while I was growing up. And the reason they didn't talk to me about it, they couldn't give it to me because they didn't get it. They didn't get it from their parents. And you can't give something you don't have. And so they couldn't pass on vital information to me that would help me later in my life because they didn't have it. And it's what makes the therapeutic value around here. What clean time is in this program, and you hear a lot of times, clean time don't equal recovery. But what it is life experiences without getting high. And that's what my little 21 years is to me. It's life experiences without getting high. And it's different things that happened to me in life in these 21 years that I didn't get high over, that maybe, just maybe, I could share with somebody else. This is my experience. My experience is being nothing, right? And this is my strength, God and Narcotic Anonymous. And my hope is to share that with another nothing and help make him something too. And so that's where sponsorship becomes really, really valuable. I take so much pride when I see the guys that I sponsor doing good and moving forward in their lives and starting to get understanding of these spiritual principles that come out of the steps. And I just love this thing. I just love this program. I would have never thought that I would have invited another man into my personal life to share with him intimate details of what's happening in hopes that he could help me go through, get through, and come out on the other side clean. You know, or to even make advancements in certain areas, you know, wherever he has experience to help me advance and get better in different areas. Because I still struggle. A day at a time, I'm still human. And a day at a time, I still struggle. And it's one thing that a lot of times when we're new to the program, we don't understand about our sponsors is that they're human too. And they have lives that they go through and things happen. I've been more stuff happened to me these last few years. You know what I mean? With gaining and losing, because a lot of times my biggest fear is not getting what I want or losing what I have. And that's the stuff that keeps me stuck in my life and living. I mean, it's one thing to show up at a meeting, and I'm real good at honestly sharing that this is what's happening to me today, you know. But not always looking for somebody to give me the answer. A lot of times I just want to get it out, right? But when I take it to my sponsor, now I'm looking for solutions. You know what I mean? I'm recognizing an area in my life that's a problem. I'm addressing it, and I'm hoping to be able to resolve it with his help. You know, and that's what it really gets down to it for me. You know, recognizing what's happening in my life, addressing the issues, no longer running from the problem, because when I stop running and turn around and look, that same problem is still there. It doesn't follow me wherever I ended up. And a lot of times I'm not physically running from place to place, but I'm running up in my mind. It's the issue that I don't want to address. It's that letter that comes in the mail that I throw on the table and don't open it. And I think that just because I don't open it, it still ain't due on the 15th. You know, and so I don't know. I'll just keep coming. I love this program. I want to thank everyone who has come out to support us and to listen to the topics of sponsorship. It's a vital tool in Narcotic Anonymous. Everyone that I know who has been clean for any period of time has a sponsor in this program. Everyone. And I know thousands of people in this program in a lot of different areas and places, and each and every one of them value, not only have a sponsor, but value sponsorship. So that's pretty just about all I got. I'm going to shut up right now, and I'd just like to say thank you once again, and God bless you. Keep coming back. Thank you.
Thanks. Brother, for sharing your experience with us. I would like to introduce the second speaker. We have Charles A. from the Sunday Morning Action Group in the Pasadena area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Hello, my name is Charles.
Hi, Charles.
I was going to meditate, and I was looking for a place, and I was down by the registration table, and he asked me if I could speak here. It was like 1 o'clock, so I didn't have a lot of time to think about it, but I have some experience. I'm supposed to share my experience, strength, and hope. My sponsor's in, from what I understand, he's in Sweden now, and my hope is that he comes back. You know, I think I called him on Tuesday, and he answered the phone and said, "Let me call you back. I'm on the phone with the bank." And he never called me back. But I called him, and it started beeping at me, so I figured he was gone. And somebody just told me he's there. So I've been in this process a long time. My clean date is December 8th of 2004. I started in recovery in 1980. I went to Gateway, and my primary drug of choice was alcohol. So I got out and I stayed clean for a while, and I must have run across the marijuana that I had stashed. So I smoked some, and the world didn't collapse. So I stayed on the marijuana maintenance program for 4 years. You know, I got a sponsor and I got a home group in the other fellowship, and I didn't drink for 4 years. And I noticed that my life wasn't like other people's. You know, I had a job, but I never had any money. I had a car, it was always on the verge of breaking down. And I was living with my parents. I was 30 years old. And I figured my life was unmanageable. And maybe I should stop smoking dope. So I looked in the Yellow Pages and went to see a counselor. And he sent me to NA. And I go to meetings, and sometimes when they say, "If you have anything, please take it outside and come back," I'd have to take it outside and come back, because I didn't, you know, I forgot. And one day I got 2 days clean, and they didn't have key tags, so I went and got high. So I was going to this counselor, and he said, "You know, this is a waste of money. You know, if you can't stop using, I can't help you. You know, you might as well stop coming." So I stopped coming. But he became my Just for Today guy. You know, he wanted to help me. In spite of myself, I couldn't stop getting high. And a couple years later, I did a lot of drugs and made it back into rehab. And I got this home group. It was like a bar room. It was a roof group. It was wild. And then it got real quiet and everybody was serious. And it was obvious that the program worked. You know, it was glaringly obvious. So I had a sponsor. I was living in Penn Hills, and I had a sponsor out there, and he was leaving for Denver. So he suggested this guy might be good for me. It was somebody in my home group. And it turned out to be the guy that I was going to, the counselor. So I asked him if he'd sponsor me, and he said it would be an honor. And, I was amazed by that. And then he told me some basic stuff, you know, like between the two prayers, don't talk. If you have any side conversations, take them outside and come back in. And, you know, just basic stuff that a lot of people don't get, obviously. So he told me to call him. And I can remember the phone, you know, like weighed 400 pounds picking it up. But I called him, and he said, "You passed the audition." So he became my sponsor. And he told me, "Call me tomorrow," you know. So I called him the next day. Now, he told me that I had to talk about how I felt, but I used to be a very shy, quiet person. Now, that had nothing to do with who I am. That's a person that I constructed so that nobody could hurt me. But I called him, and he said, "Did you want to get high today?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "That's cool, you know, you're an addict. That'll go away, you know. There's some things you can do about that. Call me tomorrow." So I called him the next day. "Did you want to get high?" "Yeah." And this went on for like a month or two. And then one day I called him and he said, "Did you want to get high today?" And I said, "No." He said, well, call me if you want to talk to me. Because he could see that, you know, I was a shy, quiet person. I wouldn't tell him my disease. So he made me call him so I could tell him myself. So I got heavily involved. He said, if you get in the center, you can't fall out. So I got heavily involved in service. I became a service junkie. And I stayed clean for 5 years. But, you know, relapse started, you know, when I had 4 years clean. And I ended up picking up. I had a major character defect. I thought my life was about me. So I was in a knife for 13 years. Had some temporary sponsors, staying clean temporarily. And I made it back into rehab in 2004. And I went to a halfway house in Johnstown, and I'd be walking down the street, and shit that he had said to me 20 years ago suddenly made sense. You know? He used to say stuff to me that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. He said, if it bothers your spirit, don't do it. And I had no clue what he was talking about. You know, a lot of the stuff he told me, I just didn't understand, but I paid attention. So I'd be walking down the street and this stuff would make sense. So I got involved in service, and I was a PI chair. And, there was something wrong with the picture. They had me doing these guidelines, and they took them from World Service. And I was supposed to have a task force coordinator. I thought that was humorous, you know. I was laying in bed, I was thinking, task force coordinator, that sounds like taking out the trash with a Sherman tank. And I didn't understand what it was. And then I found out that it's a military term for a mission that nobody wants to go on. That's what a task force is. And how did that make it into the spiritual fellowship? So I didn't know, you know, what I was supposed to do. And I figured nobody in my area could help me, and I should go to the spiritual retreat. So I went to the spiritual retreat. I had been started to live the year before, and went over and got my old sponsor's email address, because I didn't have a phone at the time. So we made a little contact. And then I was sitting at the outside the registration. I had a cell phone, and I called my sponsor at the time to get him to get a map, because we were going to have a PI workshop, and our area was huge. I wanted to see it on a map. And his son answered the phone and said he was in the store, and I said, well, have him call me. So I'm sitting there waiting for him to call, and 13 bikes roll up. And two of them are not Harleys. And they park next to me, they're BMWs, they're touring bikes. I'm thinking, why don't these guys have Harleys? And the guy gets off and takes off his helmet, and it's my sponsor. He says, you know, what's going on? So he goes and registers, and we're walking down the road, and I'm, you know, what's going on? I said, my area's crazy, you know. I don't know what the problem is. I think it might be the Lord's Prayer, too. So he says, your recovery has to come first. And then we're walking down the road. He says, you know, what's going on? I told him about the PI thing and, you know, the task force coordinator. He said, if it bothers your spirit, don't do it. And I finally figured out what he was talking about. It finally hit. You know, I have a spirit that knows the truth. And I have his ego that's insane. But my spirit knows the truth. And if my spirit is troubled, I'm not supposed to be doing what I'm doing. So he became my sponsor again, you know. And he's the voice of reason. You know, I'd call him up and tell him what I was doing, and he'd say, you're crazy. And I thought, so? What's wrong with that? And, you know, I'd do this. He'd say, you don't think that's going to work, and you're going to do it anyway. And I'd say, yeah. He'd say, you're crazy. And it never occurred to me that wasn't the right thing to do. It's been a long time since he said I'm crazy. That's a good sign. So we had the same home group. And we were in a home group one night, and he said, have you written anything on your first step? And I must have looked at him like he was speaking French. And he said, that's what we do here. We write. You know? That's what we do here. We write. So, you know, I work through the steps with him. And, So now people ask me to sponsor them, and I give them my phone number, and if they call me, I say, you passed the audition. A lot of them never make the first call. Some of them still say I'm going to sponsor, but they never pass the audition. So I have experience. I have a lot of experience. And I can't tell people, you have to have a guide on this journey. This is a spiritual journey. And it gets pretty wild. So if you don't have a guide, you're lost. You know, I have to have a guide on this journey. You know, I don't talk to my sponsor a lot now because he's really busy. And I'm kind of busy. I call him. He doesn't answer the phone. If I need to talk to him and I call him, he answers the phone and we talk. Most of the time I just call him. But I don't even have, you know, our relationship, you know, you go to meetings and a lot of times the topic will be relationships. And after doing that for a couple of years, one day I realized that the first real relationship I ever had with a person was with my sponsor. You know, it's unconditional. You know, he doesn't want anything from me. I don't want anything from him. He's just my guide. He shares his experience. He doesn't tell me what he thinks. Well, sometimes he tells me what he thinks. But he'll preface it by saying, this is what I think. This is what I think you should do. Or this is what I would do. So I try to do that with my guys. So he just celebrated 30 years last Friday. Not this Friday, a week ago. And on Saturday morning, his sponsor spoke. So I called some of the sponsors that won't go through the third step. And, you know, told them they were going to be there. So he came down. You know, so after the meeting, he said, I never had a sponsor who had a sponsor who had a sponsor before. So hopefully I can get him to work his third step because he can see that he's headed in the right direction. You know, he's done everything right so far, but we have a tendency to slip away and slip away from what works. And that's one of the reasons I have to stay in touch, because I'm my own worst enemy. If I try to figure stuff out for myself, it's a lost deal, you know? What I think often has nothing to do with reality. And, so, So my sponsor has never taken me to a meeting. You know, we had the same home group. We've been to many meetings together. But he's never taken me to a meeting. He's never had to. You know, when I came in, I had the gift of desperation. You know? When they said, chase recovery like you chase the drugs, I did that. You know, I would go... I can remember being in my home group one day, and my sponsor said that it says in the text, it suggests in the text that we do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was going to like two or three meetings a day, but I can remember this thing inside of me that wanted to argue with him. You know, it was defiant. It says in the basic text of the other fellowship, the professionals consider our most outstanding characteristic defiance. So I am defiance, you know? if you want me to do something, don't tell me to do it, because I won't do it. And I have to remember that. You know, I can't tell people what they need to do. It's their journey. They have to make the journey. All I can do is try to guide them in the right direction and pray for them. But, you know, we have to make mistakes. That's how we learn. So as long as I don't take anything, it's going to be all right. I know that because I have experience. As long as I don't take anything, it's going to be all right. Trying to keep somebody here is difficult. Because we have a tendency to sabotage ourselves. You know, my mind will always return to what is familiar, even if it's painful, because it is familiar. So my sponsor used to warn me about ego, and I had no clue what he was talking about. You know, I have his ego, I have his spirit that knows the truth, and I have his ego. And my ego tells me that I'm separate from God, that I'm separate from other people, that I'm better or lesser than others, and that I have to reach outside of myself for something to make me feel good. And none of that is true, you know. I have to stop listening to my ego, because that asshole's trying to kill me. But, you know, I had no idea. When I was in my first rehab, I had a counselor, and she said, "You're very intelligent. That's going to be a major burden in your recovery." And it has been, you know, because I can rationalize anything. Somebody turned me onto a book, and one of the lines in it says that rationalization is the use of intelligence to deny truth. Now, I was my ego, you know. My ego was my guide. So my life was insane. So for me to stop working for my ego is really difficult. But that's what I have to do. You know, this is a spiritual journey. And that requires death to self. You know, I have to stop. A lot of times, somebody will come in and they'll say, you know, they'll do real good, and then they'll go back to their old behaviors. And I'll say, "What are you doing?" And they'll say, "This is me." And I can clearly see that this is not them. This is not who they are. This is who they were. And it has nothing to do with who they are. You know, we get these identities. We build these identities. There's a movie called Revolver. And in it, he says, you have his best friend. You'll do anything. You'll lie, cheat, even kill to defend this friend's integrity. And this identity is my only enemy. You know, he's trying to kill me. It's my ego. I would lie, cheat, even kill to defend the identity of my worst enemy. Because I think it's me. It's not me. It's an illusion. You know? I have to get in touch with my spirit. And I have to have a guide to help me through these steps so that I can get to a place where I'm free. You know? That's what this is all about. And I think I'm done.
Thank you.